Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, everybody, this is Angela, and I'm here with John.
Hey, everyone.
And Jim.
Hello out there.
So today we're talking about whether we can find a silver lining to the mess that we are all working in right now. Obviously, no one would ever have wished that any of this occur. But as professionals and people who want to go out and help kids, we're trying to think of some of the forward-looking things that could help kids down the road when we get back to some degree of normalcy. And one of those areas, obviously, is in the use of technology.
Yeah, I mean, just look at what we're doing right now, right? We are in three different places looking at each other on a screen, something that we didn't even do before. And if you look at the courts now, a lot of them are going, you know, locally we are, and around the country they're going to either telephone appearances or hopefully Zoom appearances, which seem to work a lot better, video appearances through some service like Zoom. And it's making a big difference in some ways with parents not sitting around forever in a courtroom, losing time at work, and things like that. And so there might be some things that we can look at like that, that we can, everyone wants everything to go back to normal, right? But maybe it's better to think in terms of what can we take towards our return to face-to-face work from this that's going to benefit us.
I think sometimes court is actually a barrier for parents, particularly when you have a court hearing that is either likely to be continued or is, you know, kind of a check-in hearing maybe to keep something in front of the judge. And we make that parent miss an entire day of work when that's one of the things that they really need to be able to support their child. And the idea of being able to make some judgments, you know, for the parent's attorney to be able to make some judgments and say, hey, you know, this, let's let the parent call in. They can still participate if something goes sideways, but we don't have to take them, you know, out of the many tasks that we're asking of them to be sitting here for something that is not a significant hearing.
Yeah, I've already proposed it actually for one of our therapeutic courts, our early childhood court, which can be a rather long docket. And, you know, some of the parents are doing really well, they're working, but they can't afford to come to court as often and frequently as sometimes an early childhood court will meet. So I proposed that, you know, we just put keep the big screen in the courtroom. And I think that's what we're going to probably see, right? The big screen is going to be up all the time in the courtroom after this, potentially. For that purpose, parents who have reached a certain level of compliance and don't need to make an in-person appearance, they're better off working. And I think the same can be said about kids appearing in court, right? One of the big obstacles you get as a child's attorney and one of the pushbacks you get from case management is, well, they need to be in school, right? Because so many of our clients are struggling educationally. And so it's always hard to make that counter argument. I want to pull them out of school because they have a right to be at this hearing. But with technology, if they can go to a guidance counselor's office and appear on the big screen, that's hopefully always in the courtroom, then it's the best of both worlds, maybe.
Well, I like that idea. I still think if a kid wants to be there, because maybe there's someone there they want to see, we should always allow them that. But there are a lot of kids who, you know, again, maybe don't have anything to contribute to that particular hearing, or at least enough to take them out of school all day, or they're in a placement 2 hours away and they got a ride for 2 hours. And if they could participate meaningfully, again, I think it could make their lives easier and it would just be another option.
Right. Keep them involved. It keeps them more engaged. I'm not thinking, yeah, right. We don't want to ever see it used to make kids less engaged in the process or parents less engaged in the process. We have to guard against that, right? Because there's definite, you know, downside to all this technology and not being in person. But we're not trying to sell it as, you know, this is better. But there are some silver linings, like you said. And one would be keeping kids more engaged.
Right. I think this has raised the awareness of the use of this technology, the benefits for it. I've appeared in court a lot by phone. I've had to, and I can tell you very often the judge forgets I'm on the phone, gets engrossed in the parties that are in front of him, the arguments that are in front of him, and then has to, oh, remember, that's my turn to ask a question, you know. So I think there's going to be a raised awareness, and certainly this technology over telephone appearances is far superior and really easy to do and really accessible. And now hopefully almost, well, a lot of the courts in the country now are familiar with it. The other place you see this helping, this technology that maybe we could take forward with us out of this crisis, is the kids having contact with parents. No, there's no substitute for the face-to-face visitation that's being lost right now and the human contact that takes place and the bonding. But there are so many parents that maybe have to move out of states because there's more support or for them in another state, or dads who are maybe in jail or whatever the case may be. And this technology, it has been helpful in keeping kids in touch with parents in a way that telephone calls just don't do, especially for younger kids. Younger kids are generally terrible on the phone. But if you put a screen in front of them, they're a little better, like FaceTime. But if you put them in front of a laptop or a tablet with headphones on, you've kind of got their engagement for even a little bit longer, I think. And so this technology is helping, I think, in that way.
Well, I think, too, again, thinking, you know, going forward, let's say we're back to where they can have their regular visitation, this then becomes a supplement. So for, you know, particularly maybe older kids who have lots going on and they want to be updating their parent more frequently, you know, making sure, we know that getting this technology in place is what's getting us through now, but why not we use it as a supplement later, not to substitute any in-person, but to provide more contact and more continuity with the kids.
Right. And I think Jim raises a good point. Telephone visitation, we have to be aware of the generational difference between people who did not grow up talking on the telephone, right? Not just young kids, most kids do not have the skill of talking on the telephone.
It's almost talk on the telephone anymore.
right.
I'm not that young.
Exactly. You give a teenager a phone and most of them like look at it like, and you know, put it on my ear and speak into it. What do I say to this person? You know, you just ask them to call a stranger or a customer service rep and they look at you like, what? So it's artificial for that generation. Whereas you put a screen in front of a small kid or a teenager and they see their parent on it, it's going to be a lot more natural for that generation to do that. So why not use it to supplement and keep more contact going? It's not the same as visitation, but a quick 10-15 minute check-in before bedtime or when you're doing your homework, that can make a big difference, as opposed to this very stratified visitation that we have now, which is, you know, twice a week for an hour at a time at the visitation center, you know, supervised because you might, you know, do something to the child in person. But over the phone, over the computer, a lot of those risks go away, right?
And doesn't it give you now the potential for daily contact? Like you just said, how was school today? You know, what did you do today? Things like that. I mean, that's so important for a parent-child bond, as opposed to, like you said, our once a week visitation, which what does once a week really mean to a three-year-old? I don't remember what that was like when I was three, but, you know, from Wednesday to Wednesday was an eternity for a young child.
Yeah, the other thing that we're seeing a lot of now, and I'll be honest, I'm not a big fan of it, is telehealth. But I do think there is a silver lining to it. And I think that, you know, one of the worst things about our children's mental health system is the lack of continuity when a child moves from one placement to another and now has to start with a new therapist because, you know, they're contracted with a different provider, or only the new group home has its own therapist. So the old therapist, you know, would never work. They don't work for that provider. So you see all this lack of continuity and it is so damaging. I mean, you can imagine if as adults, if you had a therapist and your insurance company called you and said, okay, we're switching your therapist, you know, after 3 months of building a rapport and, you know, confessing all your issues to a therapist, you know, next Tuesday, you're seeing someone new. And that's what we do to children. Now with telehealth, maybe we solve a little bit of that problem because, you know, just because you move across town and you're out of my catchment area, which is a phrase I hear a lot from Medicaid providers, why can't you just still see this child, but maybe do it a few times remotely? And maybe you see them in person, you know, a little less frequently, but you're still in touch with them weekly.
I wonder if there's one thing our kids need in any aspect of their lives is continuity. And so if we can reduce the number of times they have to tell their story or, you know, get all this background information out again. I think that has, I think the benefits of them being able to stay with the same person could potentially outweigh the in-person element. Obviously, these are all child-by-child decisions, but there are some pieces that could make sense going forward. So we've talked a lot about the technology piece, but I think we're learning some other things. And, you know, one area where a lot of us are working and struggling is this idea of courts only having essential hearings. But again, as with all of these things, we may be learning some things that would actually be useful.
Yeah, when I look at the silver lining of that issue, you know, we do say we're struggling with essential hearings only, but there's a flip side to it where I'm noticing that things are still moving. Now, down here, we in Florida, we are having essential hearings only. I know it's rougher in some jurisdictions where they're maybe doing nothing or they're really restricted on what they can do. With our essential hearings, things are still moving forward. And I'm wondering at this point how much court docket time is just wasted by attorneys not working stuff out. And just there's a lot of garbage that happens, and just let the judge decide it instead of people working a little harder. And I'm starting to see during this shutdown that people understand we need to work this out. And this kind of goes to the core of one of the things we talk about all the time, is the dependency court isn't necessarily a straight up adversarial court. You can't think of it that way, especially a children's attorney who is potentially bouncing from petitioner to respondent side to side all the time, negotiating, switching sides with the facts, right? You start off in the agency side as hoping that your child is adjudicated dependent. Further on, you're maybe ready for reunification before the agency that you once sided with is. So if it's not a truly adversarial court, there needs to be more non-adversarial thinking. And I think that's what this shutdown has done, at least in our jurisdiction. I'd love to hear what's happening in other jurisdictions.
Yeah, we've seen that, right? Working harder to get cases resolved. And I think some of it is the whole, the understanding of what it's like to be separated, right? I think all of our clients are separated from their parents, and the parents are separated from their children. And maybe none of us really understood that concept until we were all separated from each other. And, you know, you can't see your adult brothers and sisters, right? You can't go see your parents. You can't, you know, you see families, you know, getting together in parking lots and staring at each other from across the lot. And, you know, people who literally, you know, can't wait to be around their in-laws. I don't have that issue, but people do.
And it's certainly perspective altering, right? We're all feeling it. We're all feeling it to some extent, and probably good for us as a profession to feel it personally like that.
Yeah. So I think it probably inspires people to, you know, look at things through a different lens and work a little harder to resolve things. And like Jim said, you know, is this really something I need to take to court, or is this something we can compromise on and come to a resolution amongst ourselves? And that may be fueling some of it, is being more in touch with, you know, the emotions of what it's like to be separated from family members.
Well, and I think another area that, you know, whenever there's a really difficult time, it often spurs some kind of innovation. Some people think outside the box because they have to. And I know, John, there's been some interesting things going on down there that people might want to hear about.
Yeah, I mean, one really interesting development is, you know, we're concerned about the shortage of placements, because it's moving kids across county lines has become much more difficult since this started, or really it's kind of shut down. And then there's the concern, what if we start removing children who are testing positive for the virus? Where are we going to put them? So what our state agency has done is partnered with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission, and who runs an annual summer camp for kids in the Everglades. And what they're going to do with kids age 12 to 17, when we remove them, if there's no placements for them, is that these kids are going to get to go to this summer camp. And it's supposedly an outstanding camp. Kids love it. It's all kinds of fun stuff outdoors for 2 weeks. And it gives us a place to put the kids, a safe, fun place. All the camp counselors are going to be trained in trauma and in ACEs and understand, you know, a little bit more about these kids. And they're all, of course, trained to work with kids as it is. There'll be therapy provided. And, you know, I think it's an interesting development. I you know, I'm sure that there's a lot of pros and cons to it, but it's a place to put kids that's safe, healthy. And it also, as someone pointed out to me, it's also possibly a place where they're kind of quarantining the kids. They're going to check every kid's health when they come in. And if they start to develop symptoms, they will then, you know, get them treated and take them away from the camp. So it's sort of planning for what if, what happens next, maybe.
Yeah, I think that we all know in the past, in some areas, when we've run out of placements, there have been things like offices and hotels and some really subpar thinking about what to do with kids when there isn't a family that's willing to take someone in. And we know that some foster families are afraid to take kids in right now. They may have their own issues or family issues. And so I think it's certainly thinking ahead. I agree there are, you know, as with anything like this, there are pros and cons. I mean, going to camp may not seem like the right feel for someone who's just had to leave their parents, but it's certainly preferable to just warehousing them somewhere where the people do not, you know, do not have the training, do not have planned activities for them in the summer. I think, you know, you have to give them credit for really working to find an alternative in this time.
Right. And I think it's a solid example of a silver lining, right? It's like, why didn't we think of this when we were overwhelmed during the meth crisis? Why didn't we think of this when our caseload swelled after the housing crisis? You know, but because of this, we're thinking of it now. And that's one of the things that, you know, we can take forward. And there's other things, and there's more intangible things too, I think. Like, if you're looking at this coronavirus and how it's being handled across the country, you're probably seeing a lot of examples of great leadership, and you're seeing a lot of examples of poor leadership, both on the national level and on the local level in your own community. And I think there's takeaways there. If you just observe your leaders, you can definitely get some takeaways about leadership there. One thing I've learned, I've looked at this and I go, wow, this is really something that gets solved on the local level, right? Like, I never knew how important my county commissioners would be to my health, okay? Like, my mayor would be to my family's health. I actually got an email from my mayor last night, and it was a group email to the whole city. And I responded to him and I said something about how I thought it was silly that Palm Beach County was going to let people start golfing again. But he actually responded to me, and I got into a back and forth with the mayor last night.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just strange, right? Strange times. But you realize with child welfare, I think child welfare is a national problem, right? But it's really probably, like this pandemic, something that needs to be solved on the local level and requires local leadership. And why not you? You know, why not you? Why aren't on day one, when we return to full work, why not you? Why don't you step in and be that leader?
Well, and I think we've talked about this in prior episodes, but, you know, as these, we put out some ideas that may or may not work in your area, but at the end of the day, I think when the leadership comes from the children's lawyer, it comes from the most balanced place, because in, you know, as Jim was talking about, we do flip back and forth. Sometimes we're with the agency, sometimes we're with the parent, but ultimately we're always about the child. And I think when policy change comes from that perspective, I think people are open to it. And if we're good at anything, we're good at articulating what is best for our clients. And so I absolutely agree that this is a time where, whether it's these ideas or you have innovations happening in your local area, it's a great time to take the lead. And we would like to, again, we'd love to hear from all of you on what innovations you're seeing. What might you want to carry forward? And if you have it, something to share with us, we'd love for you to shoot us an email. It's info@childrenslaw.org. And most of all, we just want to thank you for listening. We know this is a difficult time, and we do want to present to you and share with you some of what's going on around the country, and we hope it's useful, and we thank you all for listening.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.